It is April the 16th, 2014. I am Steve Grillwick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Grillwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news. Definitely check out our audio section at the bottom of our page for all our previous podcasts and interviews. And today we have a very special guest. She is the Anti-Diva, the GCW Ladies Wild Champion, and just recently won a tag team trophy in Mexico. Today I give you Caitlin Diamond. How you doing today?
Good. How's everybody out there in internet land doing, I wonder?
Doing pretty good. And I know you just recently completed a tour in Mexico. We want to get into that.
Yeah.
And you got some bookings now in Canada once again. So I guess the first thing we'd say is kind of welcome home after that long trip.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be home. I had a great time in Mexico. Probably the best experience I've ever had in my life. But just your basic human amenities that you rely on so closely and take for granted every single day, I didn't have any of those. So to be back in Canada and be like, oh yeah, there's grocery stores and there's food to eat other than tacos and the air is clean and just things you wouldn't think about, I'm so grateful for. So I'm having a blast here in Canada.
And you could drink the water.
Yeah, the water's free.
You picked the right winter to get away to Mexico because around this area it's been kind of a very hectic winter, very cold, very snowy. So I think you picked the right winter to get away to Mexico.
Yeah, I was trying not to brag every time I'd check my Facebook and I'd see all my friends like, "Wait, it's still snowing and I can't get out of my house. I'm snowed in." And they're, like, they're posting pictures and I'm just thinking, suckers. But I didn't want to say anything, right? Because I've had some bad winters here before, so I know how much of a pain it can be. But it was just like, oh, I'm posting pictures of palm trees and all kinds of things you're only dreaming of right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've been following your tour of Mexico through your Facebook page, and of course you're on social media, Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Mexican tour. How did that come about? And I guess maybe the highlight of your experiences down in Mexico.
Okay, well, I had a friend who went for 2 weeks before, and his name is Scotty Turner. He's a Canadian fellow. He got to train with AAA, and that was basically all I knew. But he gave me Conan's contact information, and he said, you know, you're good. You can go down there and train. Like, nothing's guaranteed. They might give you a tryout. They might not. And I said, great. I've always wanted to wrestle abroad. So I contacted Conan, and we talked over, you know, a series of emails. And that's how we got hooked up with it. Another friend of mine, an American guy named Mark House, came with me as well. But he, like, has a career and everything, so he only came for 2 weeks. But my plan was just, I'll go, I'll see how it is, and I'll stay as long as I want. I didn't have any serious planning involved other than the fact that I'm going. So it was interesting. We got there and, you know, things go wrong and things aren't as you're told they're going to be. So it's a big adjustment, but you have to deal with it. And I have no regrets. It was awesome.
Talk about the culture change, the social change being in Mexico versus your area of Canada.
Oh, gosh. Just, it's like things you would never even think about being messed up. Like, nothing's normal, okay? Just for one example, like the police, you don't even bother. If something's wrong, like something has to be majorly screwed up for you to even try to contact the police because they're all corrupt down there. And okay, so like for example, they have these people that drive around on like bikes or even in the back of trucks with like large megaphones trying to sell stuff. And it's not like they just circle your block one time and leave. Oh no, it could be 8 in the morning, it could be midnight, they're circling forever, okay? And it's hard enough for me to sleep there as it is because, of course, I didn't have a bed the whole time. I was sleeping on, like, a I don't know, like a tiny little cushion on the cement floor. So these people are circling around with their megaphones, and they're saying, like, buy this, buy that, I have this for sale, I have that for sale. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it's so late and or so early, I can't remember which. I'm talking to my roommate, and I'm like, why doesn't anyone call the police? Like, this is brutal. And he's like laughing in my face, like, what do you mean call the police? I'm like, well, in Canada, if there's a noise complaint, we just call the cops, and the cops make them stop. They're like, oh, that doesn't happen here. I was like, oh, well, that's kind of messed up. The culture is just, nobody cares, okay? They can have parties going all night. Actually, I was there during Christmas, and the week before Christmas, they celebrate the birthday of Guadalupe. They're all very, very, very religious. So that was strange. But yeah, every day for a week, our entire block had a party on the street. And what you do is you get a big, big, big pinata, like a pinata bigger than you. And you fill it up with candy, with fruit, all kinds of stuff, really. And you'd hang the pinata from one house through to the middle of the street, up to the other house, across the street. So these are how big the pinatas are. And it takes, like, at least an hour to get it smashed open, because you've got little kids and they're blindfolded and trying to smash this giant pinata. But, yeah, like, just tequila on the streets, beer, trash everywhere. People are just having the time of their lives. And I don't know, it was such a culture shock for me. A lot of things like that and the religion. People are religious in Canada, too, don't get me wrong, but it's so in your face there. They have statues and, like, shrines to Jesus and Guadalupe everywhere. And a lot of people, if you're on a bus, every time the bus passes one, will do, like, a, like, make the cross over their forehead and their chest and shoulders, like, every time you see one, and you're seeing one every 10 seconds, so it's like, they're constantly making the cross sign over their forehead and their shoulders. It's like, for me, like, way over the top, so that was interesting to see. The food is awesome, but after a couple of weeks, like, their selection and their variety is almost non-existent. So I imagine you're in Michigan, it's not too different from Canada, where we have a lot of multiculturalism. So I can go outside, and if I feel like Mexican, I can eat Mexican. If I feel like Chinese, I can get Chinese, Indian, sushi, steak.
Italian,
exactly.
Right.
Like, anything I want to eat, I can eat. I can find close by to my house. And there, it's just like, you can eat tacos, or you can have a sandwich, or chicken, or eggs and ham, like things you'd buy at a convenience store. And that's pretty much it. I mean, unless you go to a big fancy restaurant, but the area we lived in didn't have anything like that. We didn't even have, like, a lot of places, they have what they call OXOs, which mean, like, it's just the spelling, O-X-X-O, but it's like a 7-Eleven. So there's lots of OXOs you can go to, and it's like at least, I don't know, you can get little mini pizzas and things you'd find at like a 7-Eleven, but we didn't have one of those in our area either, so it was a lot of the same food and a lot of really unhealthy food. We had a market where we could get fruit, but there's only so much stuff you can trust, at least for me, because I got sick a lot. I tried to have salad, and I tried to eat healthy, and it was like, nope. I got really, really sick, and then that affected, I couldn't go to training for a while, and that made me angry. So I had to stick with some really boring menu selections for a long time, and I'm just happy now, like, I had Chinese food last night, and I was so grateful for it. It's, like, so different from what they eat there. And one of the first things I said to my mom when she picked me up from the airport was just, I can't wait to never eat tacos again. Because as much as I like them, I'm so sick of them.
No trips to Taco Bell in the future, huh?
No. And that's sad to me because I loved Taco Bell before I went, and there's a burrito place in the city I live in that I absolutely adore, and I don't want anything to do with it for a long time.
Now, you were talking about the police. Obviously, there's a lot of corruption with the police force down there, and we hear about the gang violence with the drugs, and we know the violence even on the border. At any point, were you fearful for your safety?
Not really. I did notice there's graffiti everywhere, so I paid close attention to that, and I did notice that the Latin Kings own our neighborhood. And, you know, when you're walking outside and you see over, like, a cable or a wire, like the shoes hanging, which is like a universal sign that there's drug dealers around. I saw those a lot of times, and I'd see people on the streets dealing drugs, but no one ever gave me really a hard time. One time, when I was really comfortable where I was at, I went to the store by myself at night. It was probably around 10 o'clock. And the stores aren't far, so it's like I've done it 100 times at this point. I had a person, like, walking the opposite direction of me, and he stopped and he asked me something, but my Spanish is really bad. I didn't understand what he said. I'm assuming he asked me if I had any spare money, or maybe he was asking me if I wanted to buy drugs, but I said no, sorry, and I kept walking. Well, as I'm walking, I turned around to look over my shoulder, and I noticed, like, he's now changed directions, and now he's following me. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So I start, without, like, running for my life, I just start, like, walking faster and faster, and he followed me, like, a couple blocks, and then I ducked into a store, and I looked, and then I saw that he saw I was in a store, and then he turned around and started walking back his original direction again. And I was like, leave me alone. I was a little freaked out, but nothing serious. I wouldn't say that had me in fear for my life. Because I knew there was help close by. And I had my iPod with me, so I was recording the situation as it was unfolding. So I had some resources with me.
You don't think he was trying to hit you up for a date?
Maybe. I don't know. I forget, too, like, it's so strange for me to say because I don't look at myself as, like, oh, I'm beautiful or, you know what I mean? But, yeah, sometimes I'd be walking, and I'm the only white person, right? I'd be walking, and a group of people, like, if you could just imagine, everyone's stopping and slowly turning their heads in my direction all at once in, like, a giant group of people. It was, like, kind of strange. But I understand, right? For them, it's like nothing they've ever seen before. And everyone was just constantly, oh, your eyes are so pretty, your hair is so pretty, like trying to chat me up. And I was like, not having it, because I don't know. I don't look at myself that way. I'm too modest, I guess. So I was just like, go away.
Well, I would agree. I think you're very, very attractive, so...
No, oh, I appreciate
very pretty.
That. That actually
yeah,
means
absolutely.
Probably more coming from you than them, because I don't know if they're just trying to, they think I have money or what it is that's going through their mind when they're saying it. But yeah, I'm smart like that.
Well, you're the anti-diva too, so.
Yeah, right. So imagine
that's part
how like
that's
I
part of your gimmick.
I don't really like wear makeup ever, and I don't do my hair, and people are just like, oh my god, you're so beautiful. I'm like, really? You guys should see my friends. You guys would freak out.
Talk about some of the women down there. It has been an area where they've booked a lot of women, American women and Canadian women. I know Jennifer Blake goes down there regularly. Sarah Stocks has been down there for a long time. Can you talk about some of the other women they bring to Mexico?
Yeah, well, Sarita's with CMLL. And then they have Jennifer Blake and Taya Valkyrie, who are both Canadian girls as well. And they're under contract with AAA. And they're pretty much, other than me, they were the only gringos there. I became really good friends with Jennifer Blake. Taya, we were like, we were good, but we weren't like close. And I didn't get to meet Sarah. I am going on a tour with her in a couple of weeks, so that's going to be fun. But yeah, they like women. Believe it or not, they like white women with blonde hair and, you know, the whole package. So I felt like my chances were really good there once I broke in on the scene. I was talking with Taya, and she said she worked independence down there for like about a year before she got signed with AAA. So just, you know, hang in there and don't give up and keep working hard and all that fun stuff. So that's why I want to go back, because I felt after 4 months I had already made a good impression on the indie scene there. So if I can just get back, and Lucha Libre is so different than American or Canadian style. If I can just remember my basics that I learned down there, even though they're so confusing, and get back there and work more indies, I might have a shot with one of the bigger companies.
Can you talk about how the fans differ in Mexico versus like Canada and the United States, and how the shows themselves are a little bit different?
Sure. The fans there are so respectful, like above and beyond. Okay. There's people that, okay, are obviously going to think I'm attractive, and that's fine. But in Canada or the United States, they'll be like, hey, baby, like, you know what I mean? Like, right off the hop, they won't even, not hey, how you doing? Nice match. Just, hey, you're hot. And in Mexico, I know my Spanish isn't great, but I could understand enough to know that nobody ever crossed a line to even to be creepy at all. Everyone, if they were going to compliment me, was just say, like, the same things before I said before, like, oh, you know, your eyes are beautiful, you're a beautiful girl, blah, blah, blah. Like, very, very respectful when it came to, like, complimenting. I never felt like, ew, this guy's a dirtbag or nothing like that. And they all, it's different there. When you have a match, everybody comes out and poses for the cameras and poses with their opponents for the cameras, like a big group shot, which is, like, so strange to me. I'm like, why aren't we just kicking each other's butts right now? And then after, like, after the matches, fans will run up to you individually, okay, and say you're wrestling in front of 600 or 700 people. You're getting, like, mobbed by fans to take pictures with them all individually, like, right after your match. And the next match is already halfway finished by the time you get to the locker room, because so many people want to take a freaking picture with you. And then they want autographs, too, so it's like they don't wait for the show to be over. They're, like, right in your face almost. But they're so nice. What am I going to say? No? So, yeah, I'd always take the time to, with every single person that asked me for a picture or an autograph, every single time I would do it. And my roommate and my other friends are like, oh, my God, you're crazy. You'd be out there for so long. And it's like, yeah, well, in Canada it's not like that, and the United States I know it's not like that either, so it's different for me, and it's cool almost. I feel like a celebrity, really, to not to put myself over, but it's like, this is fun. I feel important here. I want to keep doing this.
Yeah, you're talking about you know, possibly going back at the end of the year. Could you ever envision yourself kind of working full-time in Mexico?
Yeah, I have to learn the language more, because that was, like, the hardest part was, imagine working, okay, and it's never a one-on-one match. It's always, like, either a tag, a six-person tag, or four-on-four, or five-on-five, and it's never one fall. It's always two out of three falls, so it's not even like we can BS our way through and figure things out. No, it's like, the meticulous planning that has to be involved is, like, you have to be able to speak the language, and I don't know how I got through it not speaking very good Spanish. So, yeah, I could picture myself working there full-time, but if I didn't speak Spanish, it would drive me nuts. So I need to learn the language better, and I need to learn my keep my basics, my lucha basics that I've learned. The working full time thing doesn't bother me. That'd be a dream come true. I don't care if I'm beat up or tired. That's just a part of wrestling. So.
The Rosita Stone Learning Spanish series, then you'll be all set.
Oh, the worst thing is my mom has it. My mom's had it like since before I left, and she's like, "Why don't you borrow it?" And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll get around to that. And as you know, I wanted to get around to a few things before I left, and then time kind of just crept up on me, and I didn't have time. So I felt I would have been a lot better off if I just taken the time to do that, and that's no one's fault but my own.
What do you think you'll learn most wrestling and training in Mexico, and what do you consider maybe your best match while you were down there?
What I learned the most is just endurance, I think, because the elevation in Mexico is so much higher. I actually Wikipedia'd it because I thought of myself not in amazing shape, but in pretty good shape before going down to Mexico, and I was getting blown up like so fast. I'm like, what the heck? So I Wikipedia'd it, and in comparison to Toronto, Mexico City is 7,000 feet higher. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's why I have no endurance. But when you're in class, it's like those guys never stop. And it's embarrassing, but even people who are like morbidly obese that are wrestlers have like better cardio than me there. And it's just because they're used to it. So cardio is one of the best things I've taken away from there. Now it's like I run the treadmill and it feels like nothing. Best match.
Yeah, while you were down there? Or a favorite match?
Yeah, I would say I did two shows that were like about 6 hours outside of Mexico City. And I teamed with Angel Del Mysterio and The American. They play off of, they have these gimmicks there where they play off of the Mexican football teams, soccer, because soccer is a really popular sport there. So they have this guy's gimmick is the American, because they have a football team named America that a lot of people like in certain areas and a lot of people dislike in other areas. So he was on our team and we were the heels and we wrestled La Magnifica, a Rey Celestial, which means, what does it mean? Heavenly King. And the Chiva, which is another football team. So that it was kind of gimmicky, like these people all work like AAA events all the time and stuff, so it was fun. It was fun to see, just to play off the crowd. That was something I could do without having to really speak too much Spanish with them. It was a lot of crowd work, so that was like more natural to me. And Magnifica is a really, really good friend of mine. She ended up living with us at our house for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months that I lived there. And she took really good care of me in the ring, and she understood that I'm not a high flyer, and my lucha is, like, very basic, and she made sure I was safe. And we worked back-to-back nights in Yuropan, which is, like I said, about 6 hours outside the city. And those were, like, AAA spot shows, like non-televised events, so we got paid good money, we got put up in a good hotel, and I think I'll look back fondly on those matches, probably the most out of all of them.
Next time you go down there, you should maybe take a camera with you, and I think you could turn your experience into a reality show.
It feels like it. Yeah, it feels like there should have been cameras there, because I don't know. I think I'm a really interesting person, believe it or not.
I agree.
Even sometimes in Canada, I'm like, man, I need a reality show. But yeah, down there especially, is like, how is this girl doing this?
Talk about some of the American wrestlers or, I guess, personalities that people would know from WWE or TNA, such as how's Conan doing, Teddy Hart, and some of the other. I think Mark Jindrak formerly works down there full-time. How are they doing down in Mexico? Did you get a chance to interact with any of those guys?
No, it was interesting. Other than the emails, I didn't really hook up with Conan at all. We were supposed to go to – AAA had, like, a really big pay-per-view while we were there that we were supposed to go attend. And I found out later on that we may have gotten a dark match on it, but I didn't know at the time. Yeah, we were supposed to go to that, and Conan was supposed to, like, come pick us up. But we got a booking with an indie company, and we were like, what do? Do we go watch a AAA show, or do we work a show? So we decided to take the booking, and then we didn't hear from him again after that. I think he was maybe either too busy to bother with us after that, or just didn't care anymore. He was maybe angry, but we didn't hear from him after that. I'm trying to think people that guys would know. Oh, I lived with Super Crazy for a week. I wrestled the show that he was on, and I didn't know if he really knew English or not, so I tried to talk to him, and yeah, thank God he knew English. So we were chit-chatting a bit, and he's like, what are you doing here? Like, honestly, what are you doing here? So I explained to him, oh, I came down to train, and I'm working shows, and he's like, well, if I can help you out with anything, and you know, well, sometimes when people say that, it's not genuine or sincere, and you can kind of tell. It wasn't the case. I could tell he was, like, a super kind person, and he's like, yeah, just, he gave me his phone number, his Facebook, everything, so we talked, and I said, yeah, I'd like to come train with you, just because people in Canada and the United States really know who you are, and that would give me some good notoriety to say that I've been able to train with you. And he's like, yeah, sure. So we both had, like, a show, like, the same booking. We were booked on the same show. So we met up at the arena, and then I went back to his house with him after, and it was weird because I didn't know, like, I was expecting him to ask me for at least a little bit of money, maybe not even for training, but just for food, and he's putting me up in his house and all that, but he didn't ask me for a cent. And any time we'd go out for food, I would try to, like, at least pay for my own food, and he wouldn't let me. He was a very, very polite gentleman when it came to that. And at first I was like, almost like, uh-oh, I hope he's not going to try and sleep with me or something, you know, because
that was my thought. Maybe he's being nice for a reason,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because it's, like, sad to have to think, oh, no, what if he's being nice for a reason? But in wrestling, sometimes that's the way it goes.
Right.
But no, nothing like that. Like, he introduced me to his wife and his kids, and it was like I was a part of his family. It was awesome. His daughter came out. It was her 17th birthday when I was there, so it was like I went to her birthday party, and she would come to the gym with us in the morning, and she came to the ring with us a few times to try bumping because she wants to get into wrestling. So it was like I was a part of his family, and he was one of the nicest people that I've met anywhere in the world in my entire life, and he's this big superstar, so it's like almost not an excuse, but you don't have to be like that. I'm just nobody. But, you know, he really went out of his way to help me and be nice to me, so I'll always remember that.
Well, it's good to know there's gentlemen out there and guys that generally care about other people that want to help you out and give you the push in the right direction. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Talk about wrestling under a mask and how different that is.
I hate it. I hate wrestling under a mask. I've done it before in Canada a few times, and it sucks. It's hard to see. Mind you, and that's because all these masks don't fit properly because they're made for somebody else. Like, at least in Mexico, if you get a mask, it's like custom made for your face almost. So it's not as bad there. And they have like women's masks, so they're more feminine. Your mouth is more exposed, so it's easier to breathe. That was one thing I ran into in Canada, was like, some of them don't even have mouth holes, right? So depending on what mask you're wearing, it's like, oh my God, I can barely breathe in this thing. I can barely see. This is just a big pain in the ass. But yeah, in Mexico it was better. Like, a promoter had given me a mask and said, we want you to work under a hood. And I didn't have to pay for it or anything, so I was like, okay, cool. I'll do whatever you want. But it was easier to work with. But there was a lot of promoters that wanted me to wrestle with no mask. And they're like, well, you're different looking. Why would we cover up your face? And you're pretty. We want to show you off. So it's weird. Like, I had that one promoter that was like, wear the mask, wear the mask. And then a bunch of other promoters, don't wear the mask. And I had to almost make a decision because they take their masks there very seriously. And
right.
If you just disrespect the mask, that's like a really big slap in the face to them. And I knew that, but it's like, where do I go? Do I go with the one guy who's giving me lots of work, or do I go with the several people who all want to give me a little bit of work? So I just weighed my options, and I thought about it, and in the end what it came down to is, like, I just really don't like masks that much. So I decided I wasn't going to wear it anymore, and I told the promoter, and I think he was a little bit angry, but he just had me unmask myself. Like, rather than someone taking it off of me or winning it from me, he just said, go out there and just take it off yourself. So I cut a bit of a promo and just said, Mexico's stupid, masks are stupid.
That'll get you some heel heat, huh?
Yeah. This tradition is dumb, and I don't have any respect for this place, so why would I continue to wear this mask? So I took it off, and I, like, spit on it, and I, like, wiped my butt with it and all kinds of stuff just to get heat. But then it was fine after that. I didn't have to wear it anymore, and I got a lot more work because of it. So I have no regrets when it comes to that. But now in Canada, some people are like, will you wear it? And I'm like, well, everyone's going to know it's me. And they're like, that's okay, just wear it. Because they're, like, proud of the fact that I've done time in Mexico, and they want that to help, I don't know, sell tickets or something. So it's like, really, when it comes down to it, I'll do whatever the promoter wants, but no one's really going to think I'm some mystery Canadian diamond. They're going to know it's Caitlin Diamond, obviously.
Yeah, I was seeing some of the pictures of you wearing a hood and wearing the mask, and I just thought that was odd because you are very pretty, and why would they want to cover you up versus some of the women, regulars in Mexico, women, and no disrespect, but some of them probably do better wearing a mask down there. So
Yeah.
I just thought that was odd. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that was odd.
Yeah, it was strange. I thought it first, like, I knew going in that it was a possibility that that was going to happen just because they're so big on the mask there. And I think what the promoter wanted to do was have me lose it in a really big match, and that makes him a lot of money. If he advertises mask versus mask with me and somebody else, obviously someone's got to lose their mask. And it wouldn't mean anything if I just wore it for like a week and then, oh, mask versus mask, and I lose. Everyone's like, who cares? So he had me wrestling with it on for a month, and I think he wanted me to go like another month before I lost it, but I was getting too much work without it. So I feel a little bit bad about how that situation turned out, but I had to do what was best for me. I know he would have made a lot of money off of me losing my mask, but I don't know. Would I have made a lot of money? I don't know. I just went the direction that I went in, and that's how it turned out.
I think I mentioned this before, the name, but did you have any interaction with Teddy Hart?
No, not at all, actually.
No, okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's always an interesting character.
So I've heard... So he's very infamous for that kind of stuff. I was told originally we were going to stay at Conan's house, and then a few days before we left, Conan emails us, and he's like, yeah, Teddy Hart trashed the house, and there's no more house for you to stay at. So that's about as far as that went. I was pissed, too. I'm like, if I run into Teddy Hart, I'm going to give him a piece of my mind, and I didn't run into him at all, so...
Now that's his reputation. He's had chances with WWE and always does something to push him down the ladder. So
yeah.
Well, let's start from the beginning with you. How did you break into business? Who did you train with? And who were some of the favorite wrestlers you had growing up?
Okay, well, this is going back a long time now. I started training when I was 14.
Wow.
So that's actually 10 years ago now. And I was still in grade 9. But I trained with a guy named Irish Mike O'Shea, who he's not really, I would say, like, super popular in Ontario anymore. At the time, he was running shows, he was refereeing, and he was a former wrestler, but he had a bad neck injury, so he had to stop wrestling. So he trained me about 10 years ago, and same with the Asian Nightmare, Quan Chang. He trained me as well. I was a 14-year-old kid. They had laws here in Ontario that you had to be 18 and you had to have a license. And they had, like, basically an athletic commission that would sanction wrestling, even though it's predetermined. So there was a lot of restrictions. When I started training at 14, I knew I wasn't going to be able to wrestle here for 4 years. But when I was 16, I went down south to the States, and I did a couple of seminars and actually got booked on shows there because they liked me. So it was cool. And then, like, shortly after that, they got rid of the athletic commission in Ontario. So by the time I was, like, 16 or 17, I can't remember, I was wrestling here. So that wasn't that bad. And then, yeah, my favorites, and they're probably still my favorites, Chris Jericho is probably my favorite wrestler of all time. I just think he's the perfect wrestler. He's got an amazing, outrageous personality, which I love, and he's so well-rounded in the ring. You know, he can work Mexican style, he can work Japanese style, American style, Canadian, not that there's much difference. But yeah, anyone you put him in the ring with, he's a solid hand. And to me, that's who the best workers are. And Trish Stratus, as if you're going to say women, I have to go with her. I know she wasn't the most technically sound worker, but she just had, she had a connection with the audience that'll never be duplicated, no matter how hard they try. So those are my favorites.
Must have had a very supportive family, friends, to allow you to wrestle at 14. I can't really imagine, you know, my daughter wrestling at 14. That seems pretty odd to me, you know, training and bumping in the ring. So were they big wrestling fans, too? They've been very supportive of you in your wrestling endeavors?
They were all right. I took karate from the time I was 3 years old until I was 13. And we'd do, like, break falls and stuff like that. So it wasn't, there wasn't too many differences. Like, my mom talked with my trainer at length, and, you know, he ensured her that everything's safe. I did have to sign a waiver that if I broke my neck or something, he wasn't responsible, but we weren't taking too many risks or anything like that. I think they thought it was a phase at first. Like, I was still a teenager, so I think they thought, you know, she's going to graduate high school, and by that time, she'll be over it, and she'll have moved on to her next phase. But that came and went, and I was still doing it, and 20 came and went, I was still doing it. Now I'm almost 25, I'm still doing it. So I think when they first realized I wasn't going to get over it, it was when I told them I'm not going to go to college, and they were really, really angry, like mad. I moved out. And we didn't talk for a while. But then they figured out, well, if we want to have any kind of relationship with our daughter, we have no choice but to support her. She kind of blackmailed us into that. And then, eventually they came around. They're not going to just ignore me forever, thankfully. So we had a chit-chat after that, and I just said, look, you guys are either with me or you're against me, and that's the way I see it. So if you don't support me, I don't really want anything to do with you. And I forced their hand a little bit, but now here we are, and I have a great relationship with both of my parents, so I'm glad it turned out the way it did.
Yeah, they must have been very nervous, scared, apprehensive when you went to Mexico for all those months.
Oh, my God, yeah. My dad was, like, my dad won't verbalize too much that he's freaking out. He's just like, well, what are you going to do? What's your plan? And I'm like, well, I don't really have one. And like, I could just tell the alarms were going off in his head. But my mom's very, very open. And so she's like, I want to call this Conan guy and make sure everything's okay. And I'm like, you're not calling Conan, Mom. Like, this is not how the way that wrestling works. You have to just trust these people. And she's like, well, you've never met him before. And I'm like, it's okay, he's this big superstar from TV, I know everything's gonna be fine. But lo and behold, we, a few days before we leave, we find out, oh, everything you thought of the way it was gonna be, it's not gonna be like that at all. But I don't know, she wanted me to take a cell phone, and I just said, look, I can't afford to call you long distance, and I can't afford to keep my phone from Canada going anyways while I'm barely using it. So I said, you'll have to Skype me or email me. And she doesn't know how to use Skype. And I'm like, it's the easiest thing in the world. I tried to explain it to her. She's very, like, computer stupid, I'm going to say. So I just said, look, you have to email me, and that's got to be good enough. And nothing you can do about it. I'm going.
Now, obviously, the fears with your daughter getting into the wrestling business will be injuries. And have you had any major injuries thus far?
No. Probably I can say I've never been injured. I've been very, very hurt many, many times, but nothing serious that I've said, I got to go to the hospital. Or I've never had stitches. I've never broken anything, knock on wood. And no one in the ring with me has ever been hurt either. And for 8 years of having matches pretty regularly, I'd say that's one of the things I'm most proud of.
At this point in your career, what do you consider your biggest strength, and what do you think is the biggest weakness? What is something you feel you have to improve on to get better in the ring?
My biggest weakness is my presentation. I was talking a lot with Jennifer Blake about this while I was in Mexico. She's like, you know, you're a good wrestler. You've been wrestling longer than me, even, and I'm in AAA, so it's not like you're bad. I know you're the anti-diva and everything, but you need to kind of let go of that. It is a gimmick, but now WWE is using it with Paige, so you don't have much room for that. So you have to kind of doll yourself up a little bit. Even though it's not you, it's going to get more eyes on you. And, you know, so I'm like, I know she's right, and I respect her opinion, and she's made a lot more money in wrestling than me, so I know she's doing this out of a good place. So I kind of just have to face the fact that if I want to make more money, I have to be a bit more of a girly girl, and that's fine. I'll work on that. My biggest strength is I feel like with my experience, I've done a lot of, like, tours when I was a teenager. You know, like, if you've ever read, like, Edge's book or a lot of Canadian wrestlers' books, they talk about the Winter Death Tours. I did those when I was, like, 18 or 19 for a couple years, and that's how I was making my money, so I was constantly doing them. I can just endure anything. I'm very low maintenance. I can put up with a lot of BS. And with all that experience of wrestling on, like, a full-time schedule, where a lot of indie wrestlers are just once on the weekend, maybe four times a month if they're lucky, the bumps and the pain, it's like an afterthought to me. So I can work a full-time schedule. I know that's no big deal for me. And I can make anybody look good, I think, because I've worked for so long. If someone's like fresh out of school and it's their first match, a lot of times people's first match, they get put with me because the promoters or the bookers know I'm a solid hand. So I think I can make anybody look good, and I'm proud of that. A lot of people are like, well, you shouldn't try so hard to make everyone else look good. You should try harder to make yourself look good. And I'm like, no, that's not the way I work. I want the match to look good, everyone.
If wrestling doesn't work out for you, and we obviously hope it does, is there anything that you'd like to do outside of wrestling?
Oh, gosh. I've tried to think about this, and I can't say that I do have too much of an idea. I thought, you know, if worse comes to worse, I can. For some reason, I've always been drawn into, like, massage therapy. When I thought I had no choice but to go to college, I thought that's what I was going to go for. And then I realized, hey, wait a minute, I have a choice. So I think like a friend of mine actually just got her certificate, and the course wasn't too expensive, and it didn't take up too much of her time. And now what she does is she just has her own, like, table, and she has a lot of friends. So those are her clients, basically. And she'll, instead of charging, like, a normal, like, for me to go out and get a massage is, like, I don't know, like, $50 for, like, 30 minutes or, like, $100 for an hour. So she basically says, I'll do $25 for 30 minutes and $50 for an hour. And because she's cutting, you know, the locals' prices in half. All her friends are like, oh, I'd rather pay you. That's a really good price. So she's like, why don't you do that? And I'm like, you know, wrestling, but that's something I can do if that doesn't work out. I don't have to spend too much money, and I know I'd have lots of friends that would be okay with me touching them. So I guess that's my plan Z. I don't have a plan B, C, D, E, etc. That's my plan Z if wrestling doesn't work out.
Well, it's good. You at least have a game plan. You know, some people, they have no game plan. And then when it's over, they're like, oh, my gosh, what do I do now?
Yeah, I don't know. That's only recently come into my mind, too. Like, for the longest time, I was the same. They're like, well, what if wrestling doesn't work out? I'm like, what do you mean? Of course it's going to work out. And I still feel that way, but I don't know. That's like my last resort if it doesn't.
I know this must have been difficult when you're in Mexico, but what do you do for training and diet? What's your normal schedule? Obviously, you probably go to the gym, and
yeah.
What kind of diet do you prefer to stay in shape?
I'm pretty fair on myself for diet. Like I'm naturally not someone who bloats up or puts on weight really easily, but I eat things that I know are good for me, but that I also like. I don't force myself to eat anything gross or anything. Just, you know, like egg whites, tunas are big. And cheap too. Like, you know me, I don't like to spend too much money. Yogurts, and I don't know. I try and stay away from like sauces. If I'm gonna have tuna, I will not use mayonnaise to like mix my tuna. I'll just eat it out of the can as is. Things like that. I'd never drink pop or juice ever unless I'm drinking an alcoholic beverage and I'm treating myself. Always drink water. Like people when I had like my regular shoot job before I left for Mexico were always coming up to me asking me for advice on how they can lose weight, and the first thing I would say is drink nothing but water. Like, really? I'm like, yeah. Seriously, I lost at least 5 to 10 pounds just from cutting, like, pop and juices out of my diet. So that's a really big thing. Yeah, I keep it pretty simple, and I allow myself to indulge, because if you don't, you're starving yourself of fats that your body needs, and you'll break eventually. And you'll like spiral, and you'll pig out, and you'll regret it the next day. So, I think a little bit of fat is a good thing.
I think that's well said, because I think some people they do the diet Pepsi or the diet Coke.
Mm-mm.
They don't realize that actually makes you more hungry.
And
that's why
worse for you than actual like non-diet Coke.
Yeah, you go to a restaurant and you get the diet, and that makes you more hungry to eat the food at the restaurant. So.
Like
I don't think people realize that. I think it's zero calories. Okay, zero calories, but it's making you more hungry.
Yeah, and
the
aspartame is terrible. My mom drinks Diet Coke religiously, and I'm always on her ass about this. But, yeah, it's like, why are you going to go to McDonald's, order a Big Mac, extra large fry, and then, oh, I'll have the Diet Coke, please. It's like, why bother?
Yeah, really.
Yeah. For working out, I like to do yoga. Yoga's my favorite. On top of that, I try to do 20 to 40 minutes of cardio per workout. I do have a treadmill in my house right now because I'm back at my mom's house, so that's awesome. I didn't before, so I'd have to go running. But and I don't do much as far as lifting. I know I should probably do more because my arms aren't super jacked, but I've always thought that femininity isn't one of my strong points as it is. and then if I get like my arms all jacked up, I don't want to turn into like a China or something, you know? So I just use usually dumbbells. If I'm at a gym, I'll use a couple machines, but nothing serious. And I have an exercise ball that I use for my abs because I don't know. I can do sit-ups on the ground and stuff like that, but you don't feel the burn as much if you're elevated. and your feet are planted flat, and use an exercise ball to do crunches on, just you'll feel the resistance so much more. You'll feel the burn. So I always recommend people get an exercise ball. It's so much easier. So that's pretty much all I do.
Cool. Who is your ultimate dream opponent? Somebody you've never worked with that you would like to work with someday?
Who's currently working or no?
Yeah, somebody active. Used to be always be people would say Sarah Del Rey. Now Sarah Del Rey is, I guess, retired and, you know, training girls down in Florida.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll say Paige now.
Yeah.
Paige or maybe Natalia. But I think I have a little bit of a beef with her over the anti-diva name, even though she had nothing to do with herself being called that, and it was all WWE's idea. That'd be a good storyline, you know.
I think, wasn't Serena Deeb using anti-diva also?
Yeah, she's going to be on that East Coast tour with me as well as Sarah Stock, so I'm looking forward to working with both of them.
Oh, wow.
Otherwise, I would have said both of them like as dream opponents, but in 2 weeks, I'm going to be working with them, so that'll soon be a reality.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you keep up with the current WWE, TNA products, Ring of Honor, keep an eye on what's going on with their shows?
I try. It's easy with the internet, but I usually don't. Like, I don't have cable. I'm really cheap. I watched Raw on Monday just to, like, go catch up with some friends I hadn't seen in half a year, and they wanted to watch Raw, so I watched Raw at their house, and it doesn't really feel like I missed much. I did watch WrestleMania. Yeah. I streamed it when I was in Mexico just because I was bored, and I remembered it was on. So I can't remember the last time I watched TNA, but I know, like, I get the news, you know. I know Eric Young's the world champ. The important stuff gets itself to me, and I don't really have to work for it. I don't really know much of anything that's going on with Ring of Honor. I probably should keep up with this stuff more. Now that I don't have a real job and wrestling's my only job, I should probably make time to stay up to date with this stuff.
We just follow growwick.net and you'll be all set. So
yeah, you know. I am following you. That's probably how I get half the news. It's just like a matter of me being on social media enough to get all the news. That's all.
Talk about the market for women's wrestling. Obviously, on the big scale, the big shows, they do have divisions, but it's not a focal point of their shows or their products.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general, obviously you saw a market in Mexico. There's Shimmer, there's Shine, there's a couple, you know, all women's groups. Just in general, how do you think the market is right now for women's wrestling from a fan standpoint?
It's definitely improving, especially on the independent level. Like WWE and, I don't know, TNA has always been a step ahead of WWE as far as the women's division. But I think on the independent level, promoters are starting to realize that, you know, yes, they're men and yes, they want to see hot women, but they care about wrestling. They're not hanging out, I just want to see a pretty girl in a ring and I don't care if she can work or not. No, these are wrestling fans. They do care. If they want to see hot women, they'll watch porn or they'll go to a strip club. You know, they're here because they want to see wrestling. And if the women are attractive, that's just a bonus. They'll still have their favorites either way, I think. So Shimmer's got a huge reputation now. Shine is getting up there, and I'm working this weekend for NCW Femme Fatale, which is the only all-women's promotion in Canada, and those are really big shows too. So we're on the way up. We're not yet where we should be, I think, or where we deserve to be, but at least we're on the climb.
What are your goals from here? Where do you see yourself, say, in 5 years? Where would you like to be, say, in 5 years?
Well, I'd be stupid if I didn't say I'd like to be in the WWE in 5 years, because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, do I see myself there? I don't know. I don't want to say no, but I try to be realistic. Maybe if I work on that presentation I was talking to you about, maybe I will be there. So, I don't know. The future's wide open, really. I'm still fairly young. I'd like to be in WWE. I'd like to be making as much money as I possibly can. If I'm not, I'm completely content as long as I'm a full-time wrestler who can make enough to survive. Maybe I don't need to be rolling around in money. I've never been someone who's needed a lot of income to survive. I'm very resourceful. As long as I can see the world and have fun and wrestle, I'll be as happy as I possibly can be. So whether that's in Mexico or Japan or Europe or Puerto Rico or whatever, like as long as I'm working full time, I'm happy.
Are you a fan of MMA at all?
Yeah, I like it. I don't like it as much as wrestling, but it's okay.
What do you consider so far your best match?
My favorite match, I don't know if it's my best match. My favorite match is the ladder match that I had against Jody DeMilo 2 years ago. And that's because her and I are really good friends, and we knew we'd been feuding in this particular promotion for 4 years, and the fans were really, really behind us, almost to the point where they were going to just put us in the main event every show because we were like the main draw for the fans. And because we're such good friends, we knew, you know, if we beat the crap out of each other, we'll forgive each other. There's, like, no hard feelings. So we went out there, and we did exactly that. And the fans had our back, and it was just such a good feeling. And afterwards, like, when we got into the locker room, we got a standing ovation from all the boys. So, and that's not something that's happened to me too many times in my career. So... I don't know if it's the best particularly, but it's definitely my favorite.
Well, here at the end of the interview, we always give a chance for you to, you know, put yourself over, plug your social media. Where can fans, I know some of your matches on YouTube, is there DVDs you could plug, a chance for people maybe to see some of your work? And probably you're going to be reaching out to a different audience, you know, here at Gerwick.net, where we're typically TNA, WWE, Ring of Honor, but certainly there'll be an opportunity for you to have a connection with other fans, maybe fans that have never seen you before. Is there a way for fans to maybe check out some of your matches, your promos, etc.?
Yeah, you can always type in my name, Caitlin Diamond, on YouTube. Unfortunately, a lot of those matches are really, really old and don't reflect my current work or presentation, for that matter. But the stuff's there if you want to watch it. And then, of course, there's always going to be stuff popping up on my Facebook and on my Twitter that's more current and that stuff that I'm actually proud of. so you can follow me on Twitter at Caitlin Diamond and on Facebook as well. And, yeah, I'll just plug some upcoming appearances that I have.
Sure.
This weekend, the 19th of April, I'm wrestling Portia Perez at NCW Femme Fatale in Montreal. The 25th of April, I leave for that East Coast tour that I'm doing. That'll be until May the 10th, where I'm working with Dark Angel, Sarah Stock, Serena Deeb, and a lot of other independent wrestlers. After I get back, I'll have Crossfire Wrestling on May 25th, and I'm going to be wrestling Skylar Rose. And May 31st and June 1st, I'm working the Hardcore Road Trip shows in London and Toronto, Ontario. I'll be wrestling Jennifer Blake on May 31st, which I'm very, very happy about. I got that hooked up. And then I believe the next night, her and I will team up against Leia Von Dutch and Sleazia Sparks. June 7th, I'm working in Buffalo Championship Wrestling over the border in the United States. And June 14th, I'll have GCW again, and I'll have Conflict Wrestling as well. So lots of shows coming up, lots of chances to see me if you're in this area.
Well, Caitlin Diamond, this has been fun. I'm glad we got a chance to finally hook up. We've been playing social media tag for a while, and when you got back from Mexico, I definitely wanted to hook up with you and get a read on your experiences down there. So we wish you nothing but the best, and hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. Sounds like a plan to me.